drama first then, and Clarissa has been persuaded to flee with the notorious libertine Lovelace, escaping an arranged marriage. In London, she begins to learn of the darker side of Lovelace's character as he secures her lodgings in a house of ill repute and begins to use lies, trickery and cruel delusions in an attempt to seduce her.
Clarissa, The History of a Young Lady, by Samuel Richardson. Adapted in four parts by Hattie Naylor. Part 2. The Flight. November the 26th, 1747. The Farmer's Inn.
Dear Jack.
And so it is achieved. My charmer resides upstairs. The beautiful Clarissa Harlowe sleeps within my tender grasp. She is asleep, my beloved, less than 10 yards from where I sit now. Never was joy more complete. Her flesh like white wax, her skin so illustriously fair. The lily and the driven snow is nonsense to compare. Her wavy ringlets are an ornament in itself, falling onto a neck that is beautiful beyond description. Her morning gown is a pale primrose, her bodice embroidered with twisting violets by her own sweet hand. But what still more inimitable beauty does her dress not conceal?
But Jack, you asked me to write concerning our escape from the clutches of the Harlowe family. I might not have mentioned that I have a servant of theirs, Honest Joseph, in my pay, and so devoted to Miss Clarissa Harlowe, so observant of her distress at her family's behaviour, he has grown by degrees to be more and more helpful. It was, I think, the second night I'd slept in the coppice. I might have told her the sixth or seventh, but mighty uncomfortable both nights were, when finally my charmer appeared. I hid in the ivy summer house. We talked. She would not come willingly, and so, as arranged, my signal maid, this servant, Joseph, most accommodatingly shouting out, "They are found! They are found! Get out the pistols!" and then letting one off. So convincing. My charmer falls hurriedly into my arms, and we make our escape. None could be more happy than I. Though it grieves my pride to think that I owe her possession more to her family's cruelty and her repugnance for another man than to my own immeasurable qualities. But when she sees how religiously I observe her, am devoted to her, and how I observe all her injunctions, she will undoubtedly, as all others have, supine to my every whim. She will love me then, as I am certain in her heart she already does. The inn, passable. Dinner indifferent. Your friend, Robert Lovelace.
Mustard?
No, thank you.
A little wine?
No, thank you, Mr. Lovelace.
Dear creature, you still seem in such distress when there is so much to be happy for. I promise to be governed by you in every step. I have a number of proposals for you as to what accommodation you might consider. Obviously, this inn is not suitable. You don't answer. Have I offended you? Surely there is much to rejoice in.
There is nothing to rejoice in. I have brought shame to a family I love. I'm at a loss as to which way to turn, my reputation now undoubtedly ruined. I have asked you to leave, knowing that that alone may somehow save my name, but you insist on staying.
My dearest love, I risked all to free you from a household that was cruel to you, that confined you, that would have enforced a marriage that would have enslaved you. Would you have rather I left you in your gloomy father's house?
I'll not have a word said against my father. It was your constant attentions that forced them into pursuing the settlement and marriage with Mr. Soames. You must see, if you had left me alone, then I would still be, as I once was, cherished by my family.
6 days I slept in the coppice to attend your freedom.
Which I did not ask of you.
Today you would have been married.
I am far from thinking that my case would have been so desperate if I had stayed. I do not believe they would have forced marriage. You may glory in your fancied merits in getting me away, but I tell you, sir, your glory is my shame.
I take no pleasure in your plight.
There is no more need for you to hear my sufferings or recriminations. All I ask you now is that I may accompany you to London, where I'll find my own residence. And if I have any further occasion for your assistance, I will inform you.
You are warm, my dearest life, but indeed there is no need to be so. I have only honourable, always honourable and good intentions to you, my dearest heart.
I would not be sitting with you in a public inn, sir, if I did not think that to be so. I have asked you, since we arrived in this place, to let me know if you intend to leave me. Or have I escaped from one confinement to another?
Confinement? You amaze me. Confinement. You are absolutely your own mistress. It would be very strange if you were not so. I have one wish, and one wish only, to endeavour to deserve your favour and make you the happiest woman in the world. The moment you are in a place of safety, I will leave you.
Will you?
On my word.
Dearest Clarissa, I have your letter, my dear. You are the same noble creature you ever were, above disguise and above art. The only family in the world, yours, surely, that could have driven such a daughter into such extremities. It was Mrs. Norton who first went down to the Ivy Summer House to find you, and on her way she met a servant, a man called Joseph, who said he was on his way to alarm the family. As for the men with arms that you talk of in your previous correspondence, they do not appear to have existed. And if not, what shall we think of the man you are with? Your Uncle Anthony was here today, storming about the place, talking to my mother. There is a plot you must know about. It seems your brother James has employed the assistance of a Captain Singleton. There is a move to take you back by force with the assistance of this man, under the ridiculous supposition that you are already ruined. Goodness, these men! I have no description of him, but I urge you to be on your guard and fear he may not be a man of honour. I hope my letter will find you in better spirits. Your ever affectionate Anna.
Where are you going?
Back to my room.
I haven't seen you.
I have told you already. I have much to do.
Writing letters. My dearest love, I cannot live unless I have more of your company and your indulgence.
My indulgence?
I must have more of you. Please. Dearest heart, please.
Let go of my hand. I will be mistress of my own time, Mr. Lovelace, and my actions, without being called upon for account.
What have I done?
Stand aside.
What does Miss Howe write?
Nothing that concerns you.
Everything that concerns me.
I will return to my room.
Please don't! I am impolite and impatient. I'm sorry. I am unused to dealing with a lady as delicate as yourself. Forgive me. I will aim to behave quite differently and with greater consideration.
I desire your absence, sir. Perhaps in light of your new, more courteous behaviour, you will grant me what I have requested.
I will leave, as I have said, as soon as I believe you are safe.
though the information you have recently given me concerning your brother's plot and Captain Singleton has made me considerably more anxious.
I too am also greatly concerned by my brother's plotting.
Well then, have you decided on which accommodation you would prefer? My aunt, Lady Betty, and my cousin Charlotte would be delighted to have your company, though your whereabouts at Montague Hall would be soon known. I could set you up in private lodgings, though a newcomer in any town invites chattering, so perhaps London might be best. Where there are so many, no one is commented upon.
You feel that London, due to its vastness, would be safer?
I do.
Then secure lodging in London, Mr. Lovelace.
I only wished for your freedom, madam. My struggle was for, I hoped, your greater happiness.
Mr. Lovelace, I will never be in humour with myself as regards meeting you, or for your seducing me away.
Seducing you away?
I will always believe there was some assisted cunning in my flight, Mr. Lovelace. Anna Howe has brought certain things to my attention.
Oh, what things?
It is no matter now. These are my regrets and my folly. Nothing can rectify them. They are done. But every day you insist on staying. My reputation is damaged still further, and every hour I grow more uneasy and more dissatisfied with you and myself.
There is, of course, another path we could follow.
What would that be?
I hesitate to ask.
Please.
If you would agree, we could arrange a speedy solemnization. And that, if delicately handled, that might make way for a reconciliation with your family and friends. Marriage, Clarissa, so that I may honour you every day.
Let me go.
Dear Jack, what can be done with a woman who despises all praise and is above flattery? Why will she still wish, to my face, that she had never departed from her father's house? Why does she deny me her company till I lose my patience? And why, when she is then offended, does she carry her indignation to the utmost length?
The impolite charmer. And to a temper so vindictive as mine. Jack, if you could see the abject slave she has reduced me to. So humbled am I by her, so looking the fool, that I am determined to take her to such a place where she cannot fly from me, and then see how my will works. And my plotting, to my joy, seems to have worked. Her brother, as usual, falls into my hands, and she has agreed to go to London, where she believes she will be safer from his proposed kidnapping at the hands of one Captain Singleton. As you know, I believe that virtue cannot be found in woman. This belief is crystallized by my first love, who betrayed me when I was at a tender age. Finding my beloved in the arms of another, so devastated was I by her duplicity and calculation, I vowed then to revenge myself on the sex. So, here's the trial. No woman has ever held out against me past a month. I have concluded against the whole sex upon it. Is it not for the whole sex, for all of female kind, that this trial should be made? Clarissa Harlowe, the virtue of all your sex depends on you alone. A great venture, do not think, Jack. I have secured lodgings for her with Mrs. Sinclair. You remember Polly. How could you not? What do you think, Jack? Surely the perfect place for such a trial. And there, we will have a rabble-rousing night with you and all the White Hart fellows where you can meet my angel. Nobody doubts that she is to be my wife. My panicky little bird. That is, if I ever decide to marry. And if, of course, she excels in her trial. Your good friend, Robert.
And so he died. Oh. So tragic was it, leaving me this abode, which I hope, dear miss, you find to your satisfaction.
Tragic indeed.
Oh, so it was, miss, and so kind of you to say so. The sea took him.
The worst kind of loss.
I would say so, miss. So close to the heart. Never knowing how he died, never seeing his dead body. Oh, I kept hoping, silly I know, for years after that there'd be a knock, knock, knock on the door and there he'd be, my husband, my Captain Sinclair. Knock, knock. Knock.
Oh, knock, knock.
Now, Dorcas, knock. Take the young miss's belongings upstairs, would you?
Yes, Mrs. Sinclair.
Don't gulp, dear girl. I know she's a beauty, if you don't mind me saying so, miss, but gulping's bad for the mouth. Up you go, Dorcas.
Sorry, didn't mean to.
Oh, she's a good girl. Not too bright, but a good heart, and I hope she'll be to your satisfaction, miss.
She can't read or write, I understand.
No, no education. So hard for many young ladies and not easy on the eye, I know, dear Dorcas. Born like that, she says. Hard on the heart, don't you think, miss, always being ugly? Poor Dorcas with her sly eye and curled lip. But we can't all have everything, can we, miss?
No, she will do very well.
Good, good. So, will you be eating with us tonight?
Yes.
No.
We would be charmed to have your company.
Oh, you young couples. Want nights on your own, I expect. Not with an old lady like myself.
Oh, not so old, Mrs. Sinclair.
Indeed, Mr. Lovelace. So polite of you to say. Yeah. So you're just married?
I...
Oh, and here is my niece.
Pleased to meet you, miss.
Oh, we don't hold with formalities here, miss. I hope you don't think me too forward, but be pleased to call her Sally.
As you wish. It's a pleasure to meet you, Sally.
Thank you, miss.
Indeed, she is a treasure to the grieving heart. Aren't you, my dear?
Yes, auntie.
Oh, you must be tired, miss and mister. Up you go now to your room.
Two separate rooms.
Oh, so you did say, did you not, Mr. Lovelace? Separate it is.
Thank you, Mrs. Sinclair. My wife and I will retire.
She's not so pretty. A bit sullen round the eyes.
Come on, you, Sally. I need some help downstairs.
You told them we were married.
Yes.
I am astonished at you. You delight in crooked ways.
Hear me out.
It was not enough that I pretended to be your sister at the inn.
Dearest heart.
But now I am to pretend to be your wife.
Hear me.
Let me know all of what you have said.
You received with favour, I believe, my addresses? Did you not? Did you not, in your silence... And in your blushes, if I may say so, give me some hope of your consenting hand?
I did not mean...
Did you not? Some hope. You have declined me, I know, but this brings further apprehension. Your brother's schemes to take you are not given up. Captain Singleton is in town now. His vessel lies in Rotherhithe. If you are known to be mine, or thought to be mine, he will, in all likelihood, no longer pursue you.
I will not be a party to these falsehoods. Surely, Mrs. Sinclair...
Mrs. Sinclair's character, being as worthy as it is, places you in more danger. Should your brother's agent find us, she would be obliged to take your family's part if we are not married. If, however, she regards us as married, her honest character will stand her in good stead. I've also given her fair reasons as to why we have requisitioned two apartments.
And what might they be?
That we were privately married. And I have taken a solemn vow to be content with separate apartments until a reconciliation which is dear to us both takes place. And I have further informed them that I've agreed to behave as if we were only betrothed and not yet married, and so not take any of those innocent freedoms which are not refused in the most punctilious of lovers. And I will observe all those promises.
I am by no means satisfied with the tale you tell. I will not be a party to these falsehoods. I want you to go and tell them the truth. I will not live under more of your trickery. Unsay what you have said.
I would sooner die, my dearest love, than place you in any further danger. I will not unsay words that are only there to protect you.
It is true, I should have consulted you. But since you dislike what I have said, then let me implore you, dearest madam, to give the only proper sanction by naming an early day. Would to heaven that day would be today.
Mr. Lovelace, I implore
you... And at breakfast tomorrow, once you have slept on this reasoning, if you see fit to denounce all I have said and expose me, then you must. But please, dearest heart, remember that all I have done is to seek to prevent probable mischief for your own sake.
Good night, Mr. Lovelace.
Good night, Charmer.
Jack, have you watched a wild bird when it's trapped? How, firstly, it refuses all sustenance, beats and bruises itself against the wire, till at last, finding its efforts ineffectual, it lays itself down, breathless, at the bottom of the cage, seeming to bemoan its cruel fate and forfeited liberty. But after a few days, as its struggles to escape diminish, and it finds these attempts to no purpose, its new habitation becomes familiar, and it hops about from perch to perch. Then it resumes its wonted cheerfulness, and every day sings a song to amuse itself and reward its keeper. Now let me tell you that I have known a bird actually starve itself and die with grief at its being caught and caged, but never did I meet a lady that was so silly.
Oh, so white, oh, so soft, oh, so sweet, oh, so sweet, sweet is she.
What a singer you are, Mr. Lovelace!
The finest voice on a man I have ever heard.
Indeed, the finest.
Oh, thank you, Belford.
He was always the best of us, madam.
So gifted, so talented, so brave.
Your song reminds me of a story from my travels in Spain.
Well, you've been to Spain, Mr. Jordan.
Oh, yes, my dear miss, I am, as they say, well-travelled and well-conversed all over Spain, France, Italy, Outer Hebrides. No, all over. Je vais en France, ik in Preussen. Vado in Italia, yes. Are you well-travelled, miss?
Not as yet, but I hope to be one day.
With this handsome fellow Lovelace on board, you will see the world, no doubt of that.
No doubt.
And can you speak many languages, Mr. Torvey?
Petit peu.
There's not as many as Robert, Torvey.
No, indeed. No one among us all is more experienced in the lands of afar and in languages as Mr. Robert Lovelace, yes. Dear miss.
That's a terrible cough, Mr. Tourville.
No, it's nothing. Oh, it's nothing, sweet madam.
Oh,
nothing.
So you are also well-travelled, Mr. Lovelace?
Indeed, Mrs. Sinclair, I am.
Maybe you could tell us a story of some of your travels.
Certainly, sir.
Well, I was about to tell you one of mine.
One of yours?
Oh, well, I want to hear one of Mr. Lovelace's stories.
Yes, no, never mind. Yours are always...
You say, Robert, you say...
There had been rumblings all day. You notice the birds first, if you have an eye. They panic so, and then the smoke began. Mm. I was on a jetty in the port of Valletta, that's Malta. Mm. The sea was an azure blue, reflecting the deep blue sky in Mediterranean waters. And then the eruption began. Ash fell like snow across the jetty. Mount Etna on fire, pumping out smoke and ash onto everything around it. In a moment, the sun was blocked out. We ran for cover, our clothes filthy from the soot, our mouths dry from the heat, and our hearts thumping in awe of the mighty force from within the volcano. All night we hid, huddling in the church of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. The nuns fed us and we prayed. The volcano roared for what felt like hours, and we finally fell into an uneasy sleep and woke at dawn to an eerie silence. Out we stepped onto the streets of Valletta. Ash cast a grey blanket over all we saw, but we had survived.
Oh,
Splendido! Stupendo! Fantastico!
Oh, thank you, really. It's just a little story.
Well done, Robert. Well told.
Oh, were you not afraid, Mr. Lovelace?
No, Sally, I was not.
Robert's not afraid of anything,
Sally. None and all afraid of.
Oh, how lucky you are, miss. So many men are so fearful. But here you have a positive lion amongst men.
Sicily is many miles from Malta, is it not?
Indeed, miss, how lucky you are.
Now, let us drink to the happy couple.
No, really, there's no call for that.
No, Robert, we won't have it any other way. You will accept our toast and well wishes.
Never was there a more handsome couple.
Never.
Come on, my dear.
Oh,
dearest.
Your very good head.
Salute, viva.
Tumbos.
Baches and roble.
May I get you some water, Toby?
No, rum, more like it. Nothing. Nothing. Oh, Zumbo! Zumbo!
Yes,
dearest Anna, is there any further news from my family? I long for a reconciliation, and I am desperate to find the appropriate way forward with them. Mr. Lovelace has insisted that we tell the ladies of Mrs. Sinclair's house that we are married. He is anxious that Mrs. Sinclair, the worthy Mrs. Sinclair, as he calls her, might give us up to my brother if she believes we are not married. The shame I endure due to this calculation is immeasurable. I believe he delights in referring to me as his wife in their company, and I am further humiliated by what appears to be an elaborate game which my senses, though not my reason, feel the women of the house are somehow a party to. I regret, with my whole being, the decision made in panic to leave that night with Mr. Lovelace, and I still cling to the hope that I may return to the heart of my beloved family and stand where I once stood. This is what I pray for. With affection and love, Clarissa.
Dear Robert, yesternight was the very best, the absolute best. Your charmer charmed us all. What a piercing and yet gentle eye she has. Every glance, I thought, mingled with love and yet fear of you. Bob, I am vexed and worried for the hourly dangers your charmer runs in the company of the most plotting heart in the world. Yours, dear Bob. Your uncle and benefactor, Lord M., has written to me with great concern regarding your charmer. I tremble for the lady, he says, and I join him in that trembling. I have done nothing but talk of her since I saw you. She is breathtaking to behold, and such a gentle manner in company, even, and this was plain to see, when her company is not of her own choosing. And I must also chide you, nay, reprimand you, as to placing such a lady as Clarissa Harlowe into Mistress Sinclair's household, an abandoned house that is not a fit home for such a piece of finery as Miss Harlowe. Mistress Sinclair is a woman so hardened by life, as is her niece, as she sees fit to call Sally. I fear their machinations. You have moved Clarissa to a place that cannot be visited by any respectable lady, and so, as I am sure you intend, she is isolated and dependent on your plotting heart. Dear Bob, come now. Be honest and marry her quickly. Cease your gaming and trials of virtue. Surely you see that the jewel that lies in your hand is worthy of more. Torvi has been taken ill. Not terribly, but his cough has taken a turn for the worse. I fear for him. Your good friend, Jack Belford.
She means to go to church.
Church?
Yes, church.
Church?
Oh, you'll have to go with her, Mr. Lovelace.
She's already dressed. She's coming now.
Imagine Robert Lovelace in church.
It could work in my favour, Sally.
I thought I told her to watch her, Dorcas.
Well, she can get dressed ever so quick.
She's coming now?
Yes, Mr. Lovelace, right now.
Which church is she intent on?
St. Paul's, sir.
Oh.
Be ready with my sword and hat, Dorcas.
Yes, Mr. Lovelace.
Go and get them, and then wait behind the door.
Yes, Mr. Lovelace.
And you too. Make yourself scarce.
Oh, not likely.
Oh, Mrs. Sinclair, if you would be so kind as to return with some question for the lady in one moment.
Certainly, Mr. Lovelace.
Dorcas, go and get my sword and hat.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm ever so sorry, Mr. Lovelace. Oh, all this fuss. I can't believe you're taking so much time, Bob, to have your way. Never thought your head would get so turned by a woman. She'll be yours if that's really what you want. Once you've had her, she'll marry you. What else can a lady do after that?
Thank you, Sally, for your advice. If you'll excuse me, my angel descends.
Fool.
Going abroad, madam.
To church.
I hope, madam, I will have the honour of attending you.
No. Thank you, sir. I will take a chair.
I would deem it a great favour, madam, if you would allow me to accompany you to St. Paul's.
You are not dressed for church, sir. Your clothes are too frivolous.
Then I will change into more sombre attire.
I would wish to go to church unaccompanied.
I cannot allow that.
Allow?
Not while you're in danger from your brother and Captain Singleton.
I wish to go alone.
Dorcas, my sword and hat.
Oh, would Miss lack a dish of chocolate?
I wish, Mrs. Sinclair, that you would take this man away with your chocolate. I don't know if I am at liberty to stir from this house without his leave. I ask you, Mr. Lovelace, am I kept here as a prisoner?
Really? Miss, I just wanted to know if you'd like some chocolate.
Your sword and hat, sir.
Thank you, Dorcas. Please, dearest.
I'll wave down a chair, sir.
Dearest Clarissa, I have done as you asked. Though I fear what I will tell you will break your heart, and though you have asked me to let you know how things are with your family and their feelings towards your dear self, these words will hurt. Your Uncle Antony visited my mother again today. And I should warn you that, since they assume you are already ruined, as your uncle calls it, your brother feels he is well within his rights to kidnap you with the assistance of a Captain Singleton and take you to your brother's estates in Scotland. All your family believe, and are not to be persuaded otherwise, that your escape was calculation on your part. Your father, it is said, on finding you absent, fell to his knees and imprecated a fearful curse on you. That you may meet your punishment, both here and hereafter, by the very means of the wretch in whom you have chosen to place your wicked confidence. They believe that your flight from the Ivy Summer House to be artful and cunning, with calculated preparation. This has damned you in their eyes. My dearest Clarissa, there can be no hope of a reconciliation. You must give up all thoughts of their being so. I see the only way forward as a speedy marriage to Mr. Lovelace, and then to await your cousin Morton's return and the independence that will follow as you are established within your estate. Your dear and loving friend, Anna.
Did she answer your knock?
She did answer and then she stopped. There's a letter arrived, Mr. Lovelace.
From Miss Anna Howe?
I think so, Mr. Lovelace.
They always leave her so wretched. I'm convinced the vixen connives against me.
Miss Anna, sir?
And of course, Miss Anna. You have to get hold of those letters, Dorcas.
She seems so sad.
Her well-being is no concern of yours. She doesn't think you can read.
I can read, all right.
Yes, I know that. It's what I told her.
Well, why?
Dorcas, are you naturally stupid?
Well, I try not to be, sir.
Just do as I ask.
You're wanted in the kitchen, girl.
Yes, Mrs. Sinclair.
Why do you wait for Clarissa Howlow? Didn't wait for Sally, eh? Nor me.
It was a beneficial exchange enjoyed greatly by all parties, as I recall.
Think what you wish. Don't suppose Sally sees it quite like that. That's how I got her, wasn't it? That crying 16-year-old. No, wasn't like that for her. You know, I'd have never thought you was capable of love. Fair warms my heart that you're struck with such desperation.
Desperation? That's certainly one emotion that has always eluded me.
Here. I could drug her, you know. Give her something to make her more accommodating, not so shouty and that. Bet she's a scratcher.
From your sinning lips, Polly, nothing surprises me.
Oh, as if you were more moral than I. Don't make me laugh. You're desperate. So in love you've gone quite mad. And the desperate are capable of anything, Bob.
The man.
What man, girl?
He was here yesterday snooping around.
Why didn't you say?
Well, I forgot. Don't hit me.
Where is he?
He's inside.
He's in the house.
He was so polite, and then I thought he was a punter, and then, well, I recognised him from yesterday. I'm sorry.
Is he armed?
No, he's on his own. I'm sure of it. He knew you were here. He knew all about you, Mr. Lovelace. Sorry.
I shall handle this.
Shall I tell Miss?
No. I will.
It will frighten her? That's why you want to tell her, isn't it? Make her more your own little frightened bird.
Dorcas, tell him I'll be with him shortly. Clarissa? There's a man downstairs. Dorcas has let him in. He's been asking about us. Don't worry, my dearest. You are quite safe.
Is it Captain Singleton?
We don't know.
And my brother. Is my brother with him?
No. Dorcas is certain that he's unaccompanied.
Is it safe to talk to him?
You are safe, my heart, as long as I am here.
I need to know what he will say.
We will put him in the drawing room and you may listen at the door, so you will hear all. I am armed and your protector. Believe that nobody will harm you.
I pray that may be so.
Stay here next to the door, my dearest. I shall go in, yes?
Very well.
Captain Tomlinson, sir.
Captain Tomlinson?
What's your business?
Not Singleton.
Your servant. Mr. Lovelace, I presume? My apologies for intruding upon you, sir. I come on a matter most urgent.
Are you an acquaintance of a Captain Singleton, sir? Be honest.
Yes, be honest.
No, I have not heard of that name, sir. I am in the employment of a gentleman that goes by the surname of Harlow, sir.
James Harlow.
No, sir. Mr. Anthony Harlow.
Oh, Uncle Anthony.
And what would he have of me?
Sunday last, you were spotted at church, Mr. Lovelace, with a certain Clarissa Harlow, who is Mr. Anthony Harlow's niece, sir. It is believed that you have been lodging together, and my employer is most anxious to know if you are married, sir.
Is this a question, sir, that must be answered before you can continue in the business you have undertaken?
My commission is to bring about a reconciliation between all parties. And Mr. Anthony Harlow would like it made known to you and Miss Clarissa Lovelace, if that is what she is now called, that these endeavours are on his part, and his part alone. They are secret, and no other members of Miss Clarissa's family are privy to them.
What is it that Mr. Anthony Harlow requires from us?
I have nieces and daughters of my own, sir, and much of what concerns Mr. Anthony Harlow touches my own heart. Mr. Anthony says that never a father loved a daughter as much as he loves his niece, and he also says that she was most put upon by his family. He talks of your disdain towards the Harlows, if you'll forgive me for being so forward, sir.
Forgiven.
Thank you, sir. I did expect a very differing version of yourself, and not a man nearly as amicable as you appear to be, sir. Anyway, I digress. Forgive me.
Forgiven.
Thank you. Mr. Anthony has indeed heard that you are married, but knowing your enterprising temper, he wanted to hear the marriage confirmed from your own lips before he takes the steps he's inclined to take in his niece's favour towards a reconciliation with her family.
Ah.
Mr. Anthony believes now it is the only way forward to that reconciliation. Being that you have been lodging together, sir, he believes that that may be forthcoming in a family that misses their beloved child. But only, of course, if the correct and patient paths are taken. And I hope this is good news, sir.
Yes, I believe it is, Captain Tomlinson.
I will leave you then. I have matters to attend to in town. May I call upon you later in the week, sir? And perhaps then I might present my question once more, and you perhaps may feel
inclined to answer.
Thank you, Captain Tomlinson.
Thank you, sir. Till Friday, shall we say.
Did you hear all he said, dearest?
Do you think it's true?
He sounded an honest fellow.
Yes.
Would this not be a welcomed outcome?
You didn't answer his question.
I wanted to take no advantage, not without consulting you. You understand your uncle only wishes to be assured that we are married from our lips.
No. I will not countenance
but
it.
But Clarissa...
No. You don't know how much, sir, I have been affected by appearing to be something I am not to the people here. I will not willingly continue this falsity with my family and uncle.
Then what would you have me say to him on Friday, my dearest life?
Set him right, Mr. Lovelace. Tell the truth. Show him settlements you propose and let him peruse them to show him you are in earnest.
The settlements?
Yes. It is my dearest wish to be reconciled with them, though I will not lie. If you would draw up marriage settlements, and if they are agreeable to them, then...
Then?
Draw up the settlements, Mr. Lovelace, so as to give them to Captain Tomlinson.
Here, let's have a read of that letter.
No! It's for Mr. Lovelace.
Oh, you've got a soft spot for him, haven't you?
No.
I can hear it in the way you say Mr. Lovelace.
I haven't.
As if he'd take one look at a squinting runt like you, Dorcas.
You've got a terrible tongue on you, Miss Sally. You weren't born like that. I think we're all born pure, like Miss Harlow.
Born pure?
Something made you this way.
Like Miss Harlow? All sugar and spice, is she made that way?
She's an angel, she is. She ain't got a bad word to say about any of you, though you all plot against her. She's always so soft with me. She's like no one else in this whole house.
Why you go stealing letters from an angel then, eh, Dorcas? You're no different from any of us doing the work of the devil, like we all do. Oh, speaking of which...
I have the letter, Mr. Lovelace.
And she knows nothing of it?
No, Mr. Lovelace, it never reached her. She's got to trust in me, sir, so she sent me out to collect them from Anna Howe's messenger. Only I told her there weren't one there.
Well done, Dorcas. You can go.
Thank you, sir. Only...
Only what?
Well, only if I can go again tomorrow, Mr. Lovelace, sir.
Mr. Lovelace, sir.
If I can go again tomorrow and then come back again with the letter, you'll give it back to me to give to her when you've read it through, like you promised, sir. I don't like taking from Miss Harlow.
Of course I will, Dorcas. Thank you.
Anything else?
No, that will be all.
She's still not giving in.
Are you referring to my dearest?
Not like you. Normally they fall so fast, don't they?
Do they?
Must be a foul blow to your pride, eh, Bob? To meet such resistance. Or do you like it? The chase. The hunt, as it were. You do like it. Her resistance. What a waste, I say. She don't know the fruits. She's missing, does she, Robert? Don't know the time she might have with you if she'd give in, if she'd let you.
What are you doing, Sally?
Shut your eyes, Bob. Shut your eyes and think of the moment. Think of your Clarissa when her resistance ebbs away. Think of that. Though you like a fight, don't you? A little bit of a fight, a tender struggle.
Oh, get off me.
Oh, Robert, my love, my true love, she might say.
Sally, I said get off.
Kiss me hard.
Get off.
Kiss me like tomorrow will never happen. Kiss me like it's me, your only. Hold me.
Off.
Ow, ow. You always were mean. I was only having a joke. I was good enough for you once.
Clearly not now.
I was your dearest.
Oh, Sally, you were never that.
No, were nothing to you, was I?
I wouldn't say that. You were something.
Damn you. Damn you and your Clarissa. Damn you both. I hope you both rot in hell.
Finally, a letter from Anna Howe. I have waited for this.
Dearest Jack, I am outraged, furious, beside myself. Having secured a copy of my beloved's letter to one Anna Howe, see below what she writes in reply.
I was always against the abominable wretch you were with.
Abominable wretch? Hear that, Jack? Abominable. When all I have ever sought is the hand and happiness of her friend. And this, Jack. Read this.
The women of the house where you are. Oh, my dear, the women. It is a most devilish house. Has the wretch...
There. Wretch. Again, Jack.
Never permitted you to leave and return by your own volition? Mrs. Sinclair is a most notorious woman, as is the nature of her house and those ladies that reside with her. It is not an honest house, my dear Clarissa. You must leave as soon as circumstances allow. It is not the house a lady should stay in. To take you to such a house? The man is a vile, contemptible villain.
Vile and contemptible. And she goes on.
You also asked me to research a Captain Tomlinson and to ask your Uncle Anthony if he is acquainted with such a man. I asked my mother to ask him. My mother says he does not know the man. Is not such a deceitful heart capable of a further villainy by inventing Captain Tomlinson for his own gain and your final entrapment? My dearest Clarissa, leave that dreadful place. Leave it today. Run from the wretch, my dear. Run from him. Your ever loving and devoted friend, Anna.
How fortunate I am to have caught this letter. Imagine the damage it would have done to my lady's senses. As you might know, Captain Tomlinson is none other than Patrick MacDonald. You must remember him, Jack. A man with an ingenious knack of forgery for which he was expelled from Dublin University. An excellent choice, don't you think, Jack, for such exploits? So, now I have her letter, no damage can be wrought. I have written two new letters, both good and convincing copies. One from Clarissa Harlow to Anna Howe, and one from Anna Howe to Clarissa Harlow. My talents exceed even my own expectations so frequently. Your clever friend, Robert.
Dear Robert, unsuccessful as hitherto my application has been, I cannot for the heart of me forbear writing once more on behalf of this admirable woman. There must be some hope of moving even your hardened heart, and I can only beg you that such an excellent creature should not lose the reward of her vigilant virtue to such a profligate as yourself. You have a soul, Robert. Though it be a corrupted one, it is a soul. I have been attending Torvey in Watford. He now suffers a multitude of illnesses. I often wish you present for 1 hour to witness his suffering, and to hear him bewail the dissoluteness of his past in the bitterest anguish of a spirit, every hour expecting its last call. And yet in all his life, he has not committed even half the rogueries that you have done. Take heed, Robert. Take heed. This could be your own passing. Your impatient friend, Jack Belford.
Ah, it looks in order, sir. Good settlements, I would say, from a first reading.
And here is the last section, Captain Tomlinson. Mm-hmm. We both hope, do we not, my beloved, that the settlement will be to the liking of Mr. Anthony.
We hope so, Captain Tomlinson.
Indeed, dear lady.
And that they are also a testament to my honourable intentions. No, we are not married in answer to your question. But one of the reasons, if I may speak for you, my dear, we have delayed the decision, is Clarissa has been waiting for the reconciliation that you have given us so much hope to expect.
Thank you for your honesty, Mr. Lovelace, and Miss... I am certain your Uncle Anthony will be delighted to peruse these documents. I will see you anon, if you'll excuse me.
It has been a pleasure, Captain.
Indeed, miss. The pleasure is all mine.
You know not, Mr. Lovelace, how dear to my heart this hoped-for reconciliation is. I am now willing to banish every disagreeable remembrance. You know not, sir, how much you have obliged me. Oh, Mr. Lovelace, how happy I will be when my heart is lightened from the weight of my father's curse, and when my dear mamma... Oh, You don't know what a kind, sweet woman my mother is. She'll once more hold me. And you, Mr. Lovelace, to behold all this and to be received into a family so dear to me, all will be well. Till everyone will perhaps wonder how they ever set themselves against each other. Mr. Lovelace? Mr. Lovelace? Why are you crying?
It is due to the happiness. The happiness of... finally. Of you, finally. I did not think that you would ever agree.
To marry you?
Yes.
You are changed, sir. And my relations will welcome such a man into their hearts. You have reformed, as you promised you would.
Yes, indeed. As I promised.
All is agreed. We will be happy.
Oh, Dorcas, what are you doing?
What?
Oh, look out!
Where?
Tear the house down!
Fire! Fire, Sally, fire!
Yes, I can see!
Mrs. Sinclair! Fire! Fire, run and tell Mrs. Sinclair and my lady. Oh, my lady!
Shouldn't you try and put the fire out first?
My lady! Mrs. Sinclair! I've killed them. I must tell my lady!
Oh, what's she screaming about?
A small fire. Oh. Well, it's out now. Why do you keep her?
My lady! Mr. Lovelace! My lady!
Clarissa! Clarissa! Are you not here? Open up.
I am not ready. You cannot see me.
Open up, my beloved. It's a fire.
Is Dorcas with you?
Yes. You must gather your things.
Where is Dorcas? Dorcas! I'm not dressed. Please turn your head. Please. Where is she? Where is Dorcas? You should leave.
Clarissa.
Please, don't.
My dearest.
Please let go of me. You must.
My love.
No, don't undo what you have done. Let go.
My heart.
You must let go. No. No. Why won't she come? Why isn't she coming? I beg you on my knees to leave my chamber. Do not dishonour me. I beg you, leave.
Clarissa.
No. No. If I am worthy of anything, if in your heart I have ever meant or been anything to you, please leave me.
I will not.
Consider me, dear Mr. Lovelace. I beg you to consider me as a poor creature who has no protector but you, who has no defence but your honour.
Yes, I am your protector.
By your humanity, by all you have vowed, I conjure you not to make me abhor myself, not to make me vile in my own eyes. Please, let go.
I cannot.
You can never repair the evil you do now, and you will suffer for it, villain.
Am I a villain then, madam?
Yes, truly you are the vilest. Kill me. Kill me then, if I am odious enough to receive this treatment in your hands, and I'll thank you. Since the moment I met you, my life has been a burden to me.
Oh, then let me relieve you of this burden. Oh,
Lovelace, please, blessed Lovelace, please, I beg of you, do not inflict any further indignities, please. Let not my father's curse be enacted. Spare me, I beseech you, spare me. Where is a knife, something to end me with?
Rise then, and be the angel that you are, and that you would wish to be. Only pardon me for what has passed, and tell me you still look upon me with the eye of favour which I have been blessed with these past few days.
Leave me, I beseech you, leave me.
Forgive me, my beloved.
No more, no more. Leave me.
Please forgive me my passion. This unexpected meeting, you in this little attire.
No more, Mr. Lovelace.
I cannot go. Till you say you forgive me.
Go.
No, you must say that you forgive me.
Please.
Say you forgive.
I will. I forgive you.
It is a reluctant pardon.
No, no, I do forgive.
With your heart?
Yes, with all my heart.
And you will look upon me tomorrow as if nothing has passed?
I will. Yes, yes.
Say you will. Upon your honour.
Upon my honour. Now be gone. Be gone.
A kiss. To seal your forgiveness. One more. I will go.
Is my lady upset?
No.
Well, she sounds so. Should I go in?
No.
She might want something.
Don't go into her.
Have you done something to her? I heard her shouting, but Mrs. Sinclair and Sally wouldn't let me come up. She might want some water.
No.
But...
I said leave her alone.
She not up, then?
Hasn't Dorcas taken her breakfast?
Well, I haven't seen Dorcas this morning.
Has no one seen Miss Harlow?
Let go! Let go!
Tell him, Dorcas!
Don't make me!
Tell him! You tell him I'm not going to!
What's happened?
She's gone.
What?
Don't hit me, Mr. Lovelace.
Dorcas!
Don't hit me!
Find her! Find her now!
Dear Jack, all is lost. My Clarissa, my charmer, has escaped.
In Clarissa, by Samuel Richardson. Robert Lovelace was played by Richard Armitage. Clarissa Harlow, Zoe Waits. Anna Howe, Kathy Sarah. And Mrs. Sinclair was Miriam Margulies. Dorcas was Lisa Hammond. Sally, Sophie Thompson. Belford, Adrian Scarborough. Torville, Julian Ryan Tutt. And Captain Tomlinson, Stephen Critchlow. Other parts were played by members of the company. Clarissa was adapted by Hattie Naylor, directed by Marilyn Imrie, and is a Catherine Bailey production for BBC Radio 4.
And tomorrow here on 4 Extra, Lovelace tricks Clarissa into returning to Mrs. Sinclair's house of ill repute.
Classic comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Spriggs, yes. I'm sure it's a very reasonable quote. But I'm afraid we can't possibly afford £85 just to refloor the ladies' lavatory. I'm sorry, but we'll have to make other arrangements. Pardon? Yes, you're quite right. So will the ladies. Thank you. Goodbye. He wants £85, Bert.
Yeah, I heard. Blimey, £85 just to spend a penny.
Couldn't we charge the ladies a bit more and get the money back that way?
Don't be daft, Parky. You can't have people saying, I won't be a moment, I'm just going to spend a sixpence.
No, I suppose not. Still, I'll get it. Hello? Frambourne Pier, Mr. Pike, the co-owner, speaking. Oh, hello, Mum. No, Uncle Arthur's not here yet. No, we're expecting him about half an hour. No, well, I'm sorry we didn't get back for lunch today, but we've been ever so busy. We've been having a lot of trouble with the ladies. No, Mum, the ladies' toilet. Look, I said I'm sorry, and I'm sure Uncle Arthur is as well. No, I've no idea what you can do with leftover liver. Well, I don't think Uncle Arthur'd like that. Oh, don't be silly, Mum. Of course he's not seen anybody else. Yes, I know he hasn't been round for a few evenings. No, I'm sure it's nothing to do with the lumpy custard you made on Tuesday. Look, Mum, I'll get him to ring you, all right? Bye, Mum.
What was that all about?
It's my mum being silly. Just because Uncle Arthur hasn't been round home for a couple of days, she thinks he's seen someone else.
Perhaps he is.
Of course he is, and he was with us, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, why didn't you tell her that?
She wouldn't have believed me. She's getting very odd, my mum.
How do you mean odd?
Well, she started doing funny things.
You mean like standing on her head in the middle of Timothy White's?
No, of course not. I mean, she imagines things and then starts to get jealous. I think it may be something to do with delayed shock.
From what?
A doodle bug.
What happened then?
Well, it was June at her age, you see, and she was just coming back from the bottom of our garden with a scuttle of coal in one hand and some rhubarb in the other when the doodle bug overhead suddenly cut out.
Nasty.
Exactly. Well, she knew she ought to run, but she didn't know what to do with the heavy coal.